been here very long, and as far as you're concerned, really hasn't done anything for your wife except cause her pain and maybe some grief. And you're thinking, now how does this little child get the majority of my wife's attention? And you have to realize that, you know, there are some important matters that need to be dealt with that you're not always necessarily going to be the focus of. But I tell you what, as a young married man, that's something that's hard to deal with, you know, because you're thinking, what about me here, you know? I mean, they have help for women that are battling postpartum depression, you know, but I'm thinking, what about the men, you know? I mean, the men go through tough times too. And I'm obviously joking with this, but my point is that relationships work so much better when we can have a selfless attitude toward those around us. We saw in chapter 2 that Ruth's priority was to take care of her mother-in-law. And now we see that Naomi's priority is to take care of her daughter-in-law. You know, it's interesting how that works, how when you put others first, they tend to put your priorities first as well. And there's constantly give and take going on there. And I find that marriage works the best that way when you can put your wife's priorities ahead of your own. And the next thing you know, your wife is putting your priorities ahead of hers. And it just makes it work so much better. And now we see here in chapter 3, in verse 1, that Naomi's priority is to look out for the well-being of her daughter-in-law. It is likely that Boaz is nearer in age to Naomi than that of Ruth. And we may take a look, be able to see that if we get far enough along here this morning. But he was likely of Elimelech's generation. So here you're thinking an older man, but yet Naomi is not concerned with her seeking for Boaz to be her kinsman redeemer, but yet that of Ruth. She's looking out for Ruth's well-being. And how concerned are you with the well-being of those around you? Listen, this rotten flesh that we carry around with us seeks nothing more than to please itself. And the world screams self-gratification everywhere you turn. You know, the only way that we can have a selfless attitude is with by the grace of God and with Christ's help. Not only do we see that Naomi's priority is that of Ruth's well-being, but we also see that Ruth's preparation necessitates careful planning. If we look here in verses 2 through 4, "And now is not Boaz of our kindred, with whose maidens thou was? Behold, he winnoweth barley tonight in the threshing floor." You know, there's, let's go ahead and read verse 3 as well. "Wash thyself therefore, and anoint thee, and put thy raiment upon thee, and get thee down to the floor. But make not thyself known unto the man until he shall have done eating and drinking." I see that the timing had to be just right. If you notice, in verse 2, she says, "Behold, he winnoweth barley tonight in the threshing floor." Listen, there was a specific night that was going to be a perfect opportunity for Ruth to approach Boaz, and that was that night. And not just that, but we also see that, let me back up here. The word winnowing, I got to learn a good bit as I was studying this out. And up to this point, I actually had a little bit of confusion about certain things. And hopefully if you had some confusion about some things, this will straighten things out for you as well. But winnowing, that's the process of separating the chaff from the grain. Typically it was done with a shovel where they would take a shovel and they'd scoop up the grain that had the grain and the chaff all mixed together. And either they would use just the natural wind or a generated wind by some means of a fan, and they would take and throw it up in the air, and then the wind would blow the chaff and separate the chaff from the grain, and then the grain would drop back down the ground as the chaff would blow away. And so I thought that was rather interesting. But this should help us get a picture of some of the other areas in Scripture where the illustration of chaff and the wind and chaff being burned up and consumed can really give you a picture of what is taking place here. But notice the specific timing in verse 2 of tonight. Naomi knew that this would be the best opportunity Ruth would have. Naomi also knew that this would be the best time to protect Ruth's testimony. And we'll look at that in just a minute here. It is not good for a man and a woman that are unmarried to be alone together. I can't help but think that the other men that were helping Boaz with in that winnowing process on the threshing floor were also going to be remaining there that night. You know, I always had in my mind that here Boaz is inside of his home maybe or something like that, and Ruth is coming in unto his home, but you've got to understand this threshing floor was likely out in the middle of a field. It was outside. It was either on the ground or there was an actual floor built for this process, but they were out in the wide open area. And the reason Boaz was sleeping there was to protect his harvest. You know, as they were in this process of the winnowing, those that were working there would stay the night there to protect from thieves, so that way nobody would steal their harvest. So they were out in the middle, out in the wide open. In verse 14, we are also told that she rose up before anyone could notice her. This makes it pretty clear that there had to have been other people around as well. And this also protected her testimony because it was outside. You know, I had in my mind that she was entering into his bedchamber or something like that, but that's not at all the case. They were probably out in the middle of a field. And also in verse 3, we see, "But make not thyself known unto the man until he shall have done eating and drinking." I'm sure that Boaz is a much better man than I am, but I know after a long, hard day's work, probably the best time to approach me with something would be after I have eaten, you know? I mean, you could be like a hungry grizzly bear, you know, by the time you get done working before you get a meal in you, you know? And but there was a specific time, and she says, wait until after he had finished eating and drinking. And in verse 7, we also see that he ate and drank until his heart was merry, until he was satisfied, he was pleased. And aside from not being a better Christian, some of my regrets have been not listening to the advice and the wisdom of older men and women. You know, my back would not be in the condition it's in if I would listen to the older men that always told me, take care of your back and be careful of how you lift stuff. And, you know, that's something that now rings in my ears all the time, and now I wish I could go back and redo that, but I can't, you know, and I live with the consequences because of it. Listen, young person, listen to the advice of older men and women. They have much wisdom and advice to give us. And don't forget your responsibility, senior saints, as your responsibility to teach those that are younger, you know, give them wisdom and advice as well. And you may say, well, this woman, she spent how many years in a land that was prohibited by God's people? But it also appears that she returned at the earliest possibility too. Once the leadership of men was taken away from her life, it seemed like she returned very quickly. So make sure that you heed the advice of senior saints. But also we see that this was also done in a specific manner. If we look at verse 4, "And it shall be when he lieth down that thou shalt mark the place where he shall lie, and thou shalt go in and uncover his feet and lay thee down, and he will tell thee what thou shalt do." I see the specific manner in which this was to be done, where it says mark the place. This also leads me to believe that there had to have been many others that were sleeping there by the harvest as well, because you think that when everybody's all curled up and ready to go to sleep and they pull their outer garment over themselves, it might be hard to figure out. She'll say, okay, now which one's Boaz here, you know? But it's specifically told, mark the place, pay attention to where he's laying down and where he's sleeping so you know which one to go to. I'm sure that could be awful embarrassing if she accidentally went to the wrong person and, you know, with this request, and then all of a sudden be at a loss and say, okay, now where's Boaz, you know? And not just that, but obviously as we read along in this text, this was something that was done more or less in secret. That was, you know, obviously Naomi knew about it, and Ruth, and Boaz. They were the only three that were supposed to know what was taking place here. But also we see here where it says to uncover his feet. Ryrie says that this meant for her to remove Boaz's outer garment, so that way he would be chilled enough in his sleep that he would wake up. You know, so basically that would be like removing somebody's blanket off of them so that way they would eventually get cold enough so they would wake up. You know, I think of times when our children fall asleep, and if they're not covered up, sometimes you'll go in and you'll cover them up. Why? So that way they'll be warm and have an uninterrupted sleep. Otherwise, they might wake up eventually thinking, wow, it's really cold in here, and not be able to sleep well. Well, this was the opposite. She was to go there to remove his outer garment, so that way, therefore, he would be cold enough where he would wake up, rather than her nudging him and trying to say, hey, Boaz, you know, it was supposed to be kind of a graceful thing, I think, except for the fact that he had to be cold to do it. Here we see, he will tell thee what thou shalt do. Listen, Naomi knew that he was a man of integrity, that he would give her proper instructions, and that he would also be a man enough to see the process through as well. And so here we see Boaz as his testimony of integrity, and Naomi knows, you know what, he's going to tell you exactly what you need to do. Just rest assured, just go do what I've told you to do, and he will tell you what you need to do. Next, we see the request of Ruth in verses 6 through 9. And under this, I'd like to look at the condition of Boaz in verses 7 and 8. And when Boaz had eaten and drunk, and his heart was merry, he went to lie down at the end of the heap of corn, and she came softly and uncovered his feet and laid her down. And it came to pass at midnight that the man was afraid and turned himself, and behold, a woman lay at his feet. You know, I got a little confused the first couple times that I read this, because I was thinking, wait a minute, was Boaz drunk? You know, and I was like, that just doesn't seem to fit his character and what's going on in this story. But we have to be very careful as we read this. And, you know, the word translated drunk can simply mean to drink. It doesn't have to be intoxication. It's just simply drinking. And if you look at the way that it's worded, it says when Boaz had eaten, and basically, and had drunk. So basically, he had eaten and he had drank. I don't know, do you usually drink something when you eat? I know I like to, you know. I mean, at least after you've eaten, you want to drink something, help wash things down, right? And after a long, hard day's work, you probably need something to help hydrate you a little bit, too. So all this means is that he ate and drank. It means nothing about being intoxicated or drunk. And so I'm glad that, you know, as I was studying that through, I was able to get a picture. Hey, he's not drunk. He just ate and he drank. And besides, the whole purpose for him sleeping on the threshing floor next to the harvest was to protect it. What good would a drunk man be protecting something? I mean, you could steal him blind, right? He wouldn't even know. He'd wake up the next morning and say, oh, what happened, you know? I mean, he may not even figure it out for a few hours. But he was there to protect his harvest. Therefore, we know that he had to have been sober. And his heart was merry. Some would say that this proves that he was drunk, because his heart was merry. Well, the word translated merry simply means pleased. His heart was pleased. I don't know about you, but after a long, hard day's work, I love nothing more than to sit down and eat a nice meal and to be able to rehydrate and whatnot. You know, I think of just last night, after working a longer day than I had expected and whatnot, I saw no problem in Jasmine and I treating ourselves to dinner at the Longhorn. And I'll tell you what, after I ate that 18-ounce ribeye, well, I didn't eat the whole thing. I don't know if it was because I was afraid of being uncomfortable or because I wanted to enjoy it a little bit later as well. But after eating and drinking at the restaurant, non-alcoholic beverages, by the way, but after eating and drinking, I could say my heart was merry. I was well pleased on that ride home. You know, I was full and I was satisfied. Well, it's the same thing that Boaz was here. His heart was merry. You know, he had a long, hard day's work. And, you know, here's a note for some of you young guys. You know, work was not a curse in the Garden of Eden. God designed man to work. And I'll tell you, there's something satisfying about accomplishing a good, hard day's work and being able to reflect back on what you've done. So work is not a curse. It's actually meant to be enjoyable and be able to see the rewards of your labor. And so here he had an accomplishing day, but not just that, but he got to eat a meal. He was full. His belly was full. Listen, his heart was merry. He was well pleased with the work that had been accomplished and with his meal. Now, Boaz was definitely a hard-working man. Remember, also back in chapter 2 and verse 1, Boaz is referred to as a mighty man of wealth, which is a phrase meaning that he possessed the finest of qualities. Listen, if a man possesses the finest of qualities, we should always give him the benefit of the doubt and not think, well, you know, I mean, you know, he had no business drinking, right? No, I mean, here we see Boaz as the kinsman redeemer, and he's a type and a picture of Christ. Listen, you know, it would be just as likely for Boaz to be drunk as it was for Christ to miraculously make alcoholic wine at a wedding to make everybody drunk. Listen, it's not going to happen. But also, not only do we see the I lost myself in my notes here. Not only do we see the condition of Boaz, but we also see the conciseness of Ruth in verse 9. Look at verse 9. And he said, "Who art thou?" And she answered, "I am Ruth, thine handmaid. Spread therefore thy skirt over thine handmaid, for thou art a near kinsman." I look at verse 9 and how Ruth gets right down to the point. You know, she doesn't beat around the bush. She just lays it all out. Don't you love it when you're talking to somebody and they just keep kind of going around and around and around, and like they're laying all kinds of groundwork, and you're trying to figure out exactly where they're going to land the plane, and you finally have to ask them, what are you asking me? You know, I mean, they just keep kind of going around in a circle, and you're saying, what are you trying to tell me here? Well, listen, that's not what Ruth does. I mean, she gets right down to business, and she tells him what she's requesting of him. You know, this is not the case with Ruth. She says, "Spread therefore thy skirt over thine handmaid." This would be Boaz's pledge for him to marry her. This is the same expression that is used of God's relationship to Israel in Ezekiel chapter 16 in verse 8. The reason for her request was due to the fact that he was a near kinsman. The same word that means redeemer as well. In Isaiah chapter 59 verses 17 through 21, we see Christ as the kinsman redeemer. There were two responsibilities of the kinsman redeemer, and one was that in redeeming the family property that had changed ownership, and the second thing was marrying a childless widow to raise up children in the deceased husband's name. So there were two responsibilities that were required. And in our Western mindset, you know, we could think that it was improper for Ruth to be the one to approach Boaz and to ask him to marry her, you know, and that's really only in our Western mindset. But there was nothing wrong with a widow to take initiative in seeking in regards to the kinsman redeemer. This is exemplified in Deuteronomy chapter 25, verses 5 and verse 7 through 10. Here we see that a widow can initiate the process if a brother of the deceased husband refuses or is unable to fulfill the part of a kinsman redeemer. She is then able to pursue, and she's actually the one that takes initiative. But also we see, lastly, the response of Boaz. We see that in verses 10 through 18. First, I'd like to look at his commendation. If we look at verses 10 through 11, and he said, "Blessed be thou the Lord, my daughter, for thou hast showed more kindness in the latter end than at the beginning, inasmuch as thou followedst not young men, whether poor or rich. And now, my daughter, fear not, I will do to thee all that thou requirest, for all the city of my people doth know that thou art a virtuous woman." Not only did she begin as being faithful to her mother-in-law, but all through harvest time, she had remained faithful to Boaz as well. You know, she did not go after the young men that Boaz had working for her. He had told the young men to not touch her, and he had told her not to go after the young men as well, and she stayed faithful to that. She stayed faithful that she did not look on another man's fields. He had told her not to look on another man's field, and she stayed faithful in that aspect as well. But also, she stayed fast by his maidens. We see that if we look at the end of chapter 2, verses verse 23, it says, so she kept fast by the maidens of Boaz to glean unto the end of barley harvest and of wheat harvest, and dwelt with her mother-in-law. Listen, that's what Boaz told her to do, is to stay by his maidens, and she did that. And then also in verse 11, we see that the whole city knew her testimony of being a virtuous woman. You know, as I was thinking about this, I was reflecting on my own life, and I was thinking, you know, I wonder what kind of testimony I have in the community around me. You know, that could be a sobering thought sometimes, is what do others... Now, I know that we need to be careful in how we think of what others think of us, but it is important to have a Christ-like testimony, is it not? And this is something that Ruth had in that city. She was known in all of the city, it said, as being a virtuous woman. You know, and as I think about that, I think of those that I interact with day in and day out. What is my testimony like with them? You know, I know what we like to view ourselves as lots of times, but sometimes that's drastically different from what others view us as well. And it would probably be a sobering thought for us to find out what our testimony is sometimes with others. And, you know, we see how important it is to have a Christ-like testimony. Not only do we see his commendation, but we see his commitment in verses 11 through 18. You know, first I see his intent. Verse 11 says, and now, my daughter, fear not. I will do to thee all that thou requirest, for all the city of my people doth know that thou art a virtuous woman. You know, his intent was to fulfill her request, you know, to perform the part of a kinsman redeemer. In verse 13, we see, tarry this night, and it shall be in the morning that if he will perform, that is the kinsman that is nearer than himself, if he will perform unto thee the part of a kinsman, well, let him do the kinsman part. But if he will not do the part of a kinsman to thee, then will I do the part of a kinsman to thee. As the Lord liveth, lie down until the morning. Listen, he was committing to her that, listen, there is a kinsman that is nearer than I. If he will perform the part of the kinsman redeemer, then so be it. But if not, then I will do it. And I can't help but think that in the back of his mind, he's just hoping that that other guy is going to refuse and be unwilling to do that. And I think we can kind of see that later on as we read further down here. You know, that obviously Boaz cared for Ruth, and he wanted to be her kinsman redeemer, yet he was not willing to sacrifice his integrity in the process. He knew, the way the law was stated, that there was a kinsman nearer than himself that had the first right to be the kinsman redeemer. First, we see that he would seek out the nearest of kin. Listen, he was willing to do all the legwork and go and track this guy down and say, hey, will you perform the part of the kinsman? You know, but also we see that he was willing to perform the part of the kinsman redeemer if the other one would not. You know, there's two factors that have to be true in order for a kinsman redeemer to fulfill his responsibility. One is he had to have the ability. He had to have the ability. He had to be the nearest kinsman to the deceased husband, but also. He also had to be able to have enough money, too, because he had to be able to buy back that property that had changed ownership. So he had to be able to have the financial ability, but he also had to be able to have the physical ability in the sense of relationship goes. But he could have all the ability in the world and not have the willingness to do it as well. So he had to have the ability, but also the willingness. And aren't you glad that Christ, as our kinsman redeemer, not only had more than the ability, but also had more than the willingness to perform the part of the kinsman or redeemer on our part. Not only do we see his intent, but we see his integrity. As I mentioned before in verse 12, he said, and now it is true that I am thy near kinsman, howbeit there is a kinsman nearer than I. As I said, you know, he was not willing to overstep his bounds in the law, and he wasn't just going to say, okay, I'll marry you, and just assume that this other guy wasn't going to know what was going on. You know, he wasn't going to overstep his bounds. He said, you know what, there's a kinsman nearer than I, and if he will perform the part, then good, and if not, then I will do it. In verse 14, also we see his integrity in verse 14, said, and she lay at his feet until morning, and she rose up before one could know another. And he said, let it not be known that a woman came into the floor. Listen, his integrity was also to protect the testimony of Ruth. He cared about Ruth's testimony. You know, she was known throughout all the city as being a virtuous woman. So he didn't want any possibility of her testimony being hindered. And it's not that they were doing anything wrong or anything, but he just wanted to protect the testimony of Ruth. So we see that in his integrity. And also we see that that he measured, in verse 15, he said, also he said, bring the veil that thou hast upon thee and hold it. And when she held it, he measured 6 measures of barley and laid it on her, and she went into the city. So we see that he didn't want them to be empty. He didn't want Ruth going back home empty-handed and not having anything for Naomi. So we just see his care for them. And not just that, this was an expression of his care, but it was also an expression of his commitment too. It told Naomi, hey, I have every intention of providing for both you and Naomi. You know, and by sending her home with this, that was his commitment, and it was also an indication of his integrity as well. You know, in Matthew chapter 11, verse 28, the Bible says, come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Was that not what Naomi was seeking for Ruth? If you look back at chapter 3 and verse 1, it says, my daughter, shall I not seek rest for thee? You know, that's what Naomi's desire was for Ruth, was for her to find rest. And that rest would be in the kinsman redeemer. And our kinsman redeemer wants to give us rest as well. Obviously, we have the great rest yet to look forward to, but he wants to give us rest now. You know, he gives us a peace that passes all understanding. You know, that's the only way that things can take place in our lives, and we may not understand why, but yet we know that we have a God that's in control, right? And that's a peace that passes all understanding. I tell you what, that's a peace that gives rest as well. Up until I was 21 years of age, when I got saved, I had no peace. It was constant turmoil, you know. I thought everything would rise and fall upon my actions and my conduct. If things weren't going right, it was my fault. If things were going right, it was because I was doing right. And I tell you what, that's a heavy burden for a young man to carry. And I was so thankful when the Lord saved me that he lifted that burden off of me. I knew that was a burden I couldn't carry. And he gave me a peace that passed all understanding. And I tell you, that is a much easier load to carry than the one that I was. And we know that Christ is not willing that any should perish, but that all should come to repentance. You know, he's not just able, but he's willing to be everybody's kinsman redeemer. And I'm thankful for that. And we know that he has come that we may have life, and that we may have life more abundantly. Christ does not want us to leave empty, but full. Here Naomi comes back to Bethlehem, Judah, and she said, I left full, but I've come back empty. Now, is Boaz not trying to help fill her back up? Aren't you thankful for that? The fact that Christ does not want us to be empty, but he wants us to be full. We know that we have a friend that sticketh closer than a brother. And we know that Christ will never leave us nor forsake us.